Kelly, we're already.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting for this day, June the 2nd, 2021, at 4 p.m. Would we all stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance and then a moment of silence?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So we have the adoption of the agenda. We have any things to add or delete?
Ms. Booker, if we could add three things, just three discussion pieces, two under one finished, under unfinished business. One is, I know the board talked about the BOS salaries. Just have a quick discussion about that, nothing too in-depth. Mm-hmm. And then also some guidance on the coves at Monticello, the affordable housing complex. And then under new business, I just wanted to get the board's indication on something before we do a presentation on small purchasing thresholds. So again, BOS salaries under unfinished, coves at Monticello under unfinished, and then small purchasing thresholds under new business, and there'll be quick discussions. There's no formal action or anything required.
Yes.
I move that we adopt the agenda with the additional discussions during unfinished business, right?
And new business.
And new business.
Yep. Okay. Second. A motion has been made by Mrs. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The motion passes.
Mr. Chairman, the record should show that you arrived and assumed the chair. Mrs. Booker stepped out, thereby allowing Mrs. Booker to make that motion.
Thank you. And absent is Mr. Sheridan.
Yep. Mr. Sheridan will be here sometime shortly. There was some type of
fire alarm.
I'm not sure where.
So next is the County Administrator's report.
Yep. One thing before we get started, members of the board. Today we've got Will Tanner with Mr. Payne's office. Mr. Tanner, if you'd stand up. He's here today just to kind of see some of the board proceedings, and then Mr. Payne, you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, he's basically just coming by to introduce himself.
Yep. So
he has a filial lacrosse game at the high school at 5:30, so he won't be staying.
Well, we certainly welcome Mr. Tanner and everybody else.
So just a few announcements. We have a new employee starting at the Sheriff's Office, William White, Deputy in Training, started at the Sheriff's Office. He started on May 26th. And I think for the next one, too, for the next meeting, we'll have some additional employees to add to this as well. Under Spotlight on Business, let me just clear out some of this here a little bit. Under Spotlight on Business, so DJ's Unique Finds Consignment and Thrift Shop, the grand opening was May 29th, located in Crofton Plaza, 100A Crofton Plaza, across from the gas station. This is the store owner's second business. Dolores DJ Hubert Christmas also operates DJ's Unique Services, a cleaning company. And again, you can find both businesses on buyfromflavanna.org in the business directory. So again, glad to see another local business is expanding and doing some expanding the service in the county. In addition, Flavanna would certainly like to welcome Stewart Tool Company. The governor, Governor Northam, made an announcement last week. Stewart Tool Company is a California company, and they're adding an East Coast operation. They're going to be locating in the old Klockner Metals Building at Zion's Crossroads. And Stewart Tool, I'm not going to say it too fast. Stewart Tool had 22 jobs over 3 years, and they're investing 9.1. And like I said, it's a family business, been in the business for generations. So that'll be a nice new welcome addition to the county. And just a little look at just some vaccination numbers for Fluvanna. If you can see right here, you can see kind of Albemarle County, and so we're right there. You can see that we're doing well, fairly well, in respect to a lot of our other neighboring counties, too, for having a higher vaccination percentage for our population. So currently, we got 50% of our population in Fluvanna that has at least one dose, and we have 44.6% of the population that's fully vaccinated. I think we had the last vaccination clinic at the gym this past Friday, and they have some additional ones ramping up. I think there's going to be one at the high school in the future.
Saturdays,
yeah.
Right now, it's the school time.
Yeah, so we do have some additional vaccination clinics still happening in the county, but they're going to be moving over to the high school. And just a little update on your regular meeting. So remember, at June 16th, we have a 7 p.m. regular meeting. And then for July, we only have one meeting in July, so we will have a 4 p.m. regular meeting, we'll have a break, and then we'll have a 7 p.m. regular meeting where we can do any public hearings and stuff like that. Then again, our next meeting will not be until, I don't know what the August date is, but we'll have it for you on the 16th. But I would be happy to answer any questions from the board if you have any.
It's really nice to have two governor's announcements in 6 months in our place, so that's excellent. We will now open our first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Anyone wishing to address the board at this time?
I know we got an email about Ms. Folks wanted to address the board, so I think, Kelly, do you see her?
I do. Let me allow her to unmute herself.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak. My name is Lois Folks. I live at 331 Oak Creek Road in Palmyra, Virginia. This is the land that is immediately adjacent to the proposed subdivision by Mr. Tim Miller for the Ballinger Bluff project. I just want to start by saying that it is my total belief that Mr. Miller's project as proposed threatens the environmental character and may have a huge eventual impact on the county. I was reading some of Fluvanna County's own stipulations about this, and the planning and zoning guidelines on page 71, Part B, Section 1, it mentions that the proposed use should not tend to change the character and established pattern of the area or community. So to address that, I would just say experimenting with multiple untested central septic systems on land that likely does not perk to be tested in the midst of 20 newly constructed houses, each built on 0.35 acres, and an 11-acre area is a huge risk with no margin for error. Using 20 wells in a very small water problematic area all automatically changes and threatens the character and established pattern of the rural Oak Creek Road community. And that same planning and zoning guidelines on page 71, Part B, Section 2, the proposed use should be compatible with the uses permitted by right in that zoning district and should not adversely affect the use or the value of neighboring properties. So to address that issue, Mr. Miller's central septic and drainage systems are an experiment, not by right. They have never been tried in the state of Virginia or in Fluvanna County. So by right, Mr. Miller could create specially treated single-use individual septic drain fields in a traditional way that has already proved itself in Virginia and or Fluvanna. And in this way, the natural drainage of the land with the health department oversight determines the number of houses to be built, which is as it should be. So I'm extremely concerned. One of the Planning Commission recommendations listed as number 3, part 2 of that, mentioned that individual wells, which shall be shown to provide adequate water service to all lots, of which wells shall be shown not to impair the supply of groundwater to adjacent properties. I just would like to underscore the idea that adverse effects of this unknown system in such a crowded area leaves absolutely no margin for error, and some of these bad effects would not be known for months or years. And the community is just very concerned about how we will be kept informed about discussions or negotiations with the developer concerning his fulfilling these conditions, and how will we test that. My concern also is that perhaps we have reversed the correct order of discussion, since the issue of water has not been established completely, and I don't really see how it could unless he digs 20 wells, and then we see, number one, if there is enough water, and number two, does that affect neighboring wells, springs, and the waterways that flow downhill from his elevated land position to the nearby neighbors, which certainly includes mine. So of a personal interest, I just want to ask, what protection do I have as the immediate landowner immediately adjacent to this plan if in 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now there is a consequence that creates either contamination, stench, stagnation, water contamination, drying up? What do the neighbors have as any sort of a guarantee or conditional protection from this project that is hugely impactful in such a small area of land? So thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to speak?
Yes, I'd like to speak.
Yes, your name and address, please.
My name is Susan Schofield, and I live at 111 Fairview Lane in Palmyra. Is there any way to turn my video back on? It's, when I click on the button, it's not coming on at all.
Change right now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry, I teach and those screens bother me, so thank you very much. I too would like to talk to the board about Mr. Miller's proposed Ballinger Bluff subdivision. The neighbors know Mr. Miller can, by right, develop the Ballinger Bluff property. We get that. I'm not sure the board understands our position. We are concerned about the density of the lots and water availability, not only for potential Ballinger Bluff homeowners, but for adjoining neighbors as well. At the April 23rd Planning Commission meeting, the Planning Commission passed a sketch plan for the proposed Ballinger Bluff development with four conditions. The third of the four required conditions for approval of the preliminary and final subdivision plat review states, prior to final plat approval, the request shall meet all health department requirements, in particular, that all lots shall be served by one, individual sewerage systems, or one or more approved central sewage systems, and two, individual wells, which shall be shown to provide adequate water service to all the lots of which wells shall be shown not to impair the supply of groundwater to adjacent properties. One more time, that little piece. Wells dug shall be shown not to impair the supply of groundwater to adjacent properties or the neighbors of this proposed Ballinger Bluff subdivision. This concerns the neighbors because, number one, placement of 20 wells on adjoining 1/4 and 1/3 acre lots in an area which has a history of significant well problems is deeply problematic. Currently, our lots range from 2 acres to 12 acres. Mr. Miller is proposing to put 20 homes, each with its own well, on 11 acres of steeply sloped land. What happens when a Ballinger Bluff homeowner or one of the adjoining neighbors finds their well dry and there is no land to dig another well? This concerns the neighbors because, number two, Mr. Miller has drilled 2 test wells. We don't know their location or how close they are to each other. The neighbors had requested that Mr. Miller drill 1 well close to the Folks property. You just heard Lois speak, which is very close to the proposed subdivision. Run that test well for 24 hours and measure the impact on Ms. Folks' well. This has not been done to date. Ballinger Bluff subdivision concerns us because, number three, at the January 12th Planning Commission public hearing on the proposed development, Chairman Bibb said, "How can we recommend approval of a central sewer system if we do not know what the available water is for a rural cluster subdivision development of these subject properties?" Please refer to minutes from January 12th Public Commission meeting, page 5-17. Section 19-4-5 of the Fluvanna Subdivision Ordinance says, "Consideration shall be given, among other things, to the area of land which would be occupied by roads and other areas not usable for building or individual sale, including but not limited to steep slopes, floodplain, land usually covered by water, and land not suitable for building and or, ready now, installation of utilities due to soil type, topography, or other physical or legal condition."
Ms. Schofield, I'm going to have to ask you to pause now. Your 5 minutes are up. You can speak again at their second round of public comments.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Is there anyone else wishing to speak? Having no one else ready to speak, I'm going to close our first round of public comments. Next, we don't have any public hearings, so we'll move on to action matters. I'll turn it over to County Administrator.
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the board. So this next one, this is really a little bit administrative. The Sheriff's Office and some of the deputies have been doing some off-duty work, but and maybe Fred can talk about this a little bit more since it's an amendment to our ordinance.
Yeah, this is a situation that everybody knows about. The sheriff's deputies are frequently called on to work security, high school football games, things like that, and they are paid for that. And the sheriff has in place a regime for taking care of that. Everybody seems to be happy with it. Recently, I won't say whether we discovered it or it was, I think we discovered it, but there's a statute that actually requires the board's approval by ordinance to do that. Now, it's been going on, I know we did it when I was in high school. That's what this is. I don't think it's at all controversial. The sheriff already has regulations for it. is simply to regularize a practice that's been in use for a long time.
Yeah, and again, with this, you know, the county ends up charging a little bit more than what the deputies are paid. It's really a pass-through. We cover some administrative fees, so it's no money necessarily coming out of the county. Maybe just, you know, again, what we charge above what they get paid should offset it.
The customer charges.
Correct.
The customer pays
the county
a certain amount to the county. A small portion of it goes to the county, as Eric said, for the administrative expenses and whatnot. The rest of it goes to the office.
Yep. So, and again, this is just authorization to advertise for a public hearing because we're making an ordinance, ordinance amendment or ordinance addition. So that's.
Are there any questions from the board? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve county staff and the county attorney to prepare and advertise a notice of a public hearing to be held on July 7th, 2021 at 7 p.m. for a proposed amendment of the county code to add section 8-7, employment of off-duty deputy sheriffs, which will allow deputies to work private events off-duty.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion has been made by Mrs. Eager and seconded by Mrs. Booker. All those in favor say aye.
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 The chair votes aye. The motion passes 4-0 with Mr. Sheridan being absent. Next is the CARES forced charter extension. Mr. Dahl.
Again, another fairly quick one here. So the CARE task force was created and established by the board on July 5th, 2017. It was originally meant to be a 6-year charter, which was supposed to end December 31, 2017. From that point, we've extended it, what's it here now, I guess 3 additional whole fiscal years. And we've gotten some stuff done. Again, it's not meant to be this kind of perpetual task force. We have some things in place now, you know, specifically the spotlight abatement program that addresses, you know, some of the concerns. But there's still some things that the CARE task force and those that are on there still would like to accomplish. So we had discussed and are requesting to extend it through December 31st, 2021. On the next meeting on June 16th, we would then bring forward any applicants that want to be on the CARE task force, assuming the board agrees to extend the charter for another 6 months. So again, this is just to extend the CARE task force charter because again, it was to terminate June 31st, 2021, and it brings it through December 31st, 2021. And if we find at that point, maybe if there's, you know, we're deep in the midst of something, then, you know, then maybe we can. But like I said, we're trying to address some things, and it wasn't meant to be a forever task force.
Did you meet during the COVID?
We did. We actually had probably, I take that back, we had probably about...
I haven't been very good since we've been virtual. I'm
you know, being late. We did have some months, Ms. Booker, maybe, let me see here.
I was going to say
5 months. Yeah, 5 months that we didn't meet. And then once, you know, we ended up meeting virtually for a while. So again, you know, we got some momentum going. We have some things we want to do. So again, just requesting the board extend it, and we'll see what happens at that point.
Yeah, I read you have in the board package. You have the charter. I mean, things
yes.
that they're doing.
Yep.
And my question, you know, of course, I go through there, as all of us probably. No, I guess a lot of you don't. I got to go through there.
I drive the bus through there.
Yeah, Mike and I don't think Mike and I probably don't want to go through. What are the barriers that's keeping us from having the landlord do more? Because you clean up and then you go back and it's the same or worse. And I'm not trying to judge anybody. My heart's in it, it's compassion. But I just don't know how, maybe you can't help the living situation of our citizens in that area. I don't know what else can we do.
So for the spotlight, so again, you know, the board approved that probably close to
3 years ago.
That was, I think it was 2 years ago.
Yes,
it was right when I became county administrator, shortly thereafter. So really within the past 4 or 5 months, you know, we've been talking more to the CARE Task Force about it. They kind of understand what tools they have in their belt. Mm-hmm. So we have received 6 official complaints against properties, specifically properties in Columbia. Out of those 6, one of them was determined to be an unwarranted claim, but it doesn't mean that doesn't bring to the county's attention other issues that may fall into play, such as a trash ordinance or numerous cars. But 5 of those properties have been found in violation of the spotlight. So there's procedures in place to make the necessary requirements, whether it's a structural requirement, whether, you know, there's a roof issue, whether it's a building that's almost fallen down, that's, you know, it's just, you can't do anything with it at this point. So at where we stand right now, we do have property owners that have been put on notice that they have 90 days to make necessary repairs, and we have some other circumstances with a few others that we had to extend that a little bit. But there, some of that process is moving forward. So hopefully, as this moves on, hopefully this will address some things. And if those property owners choose not to make those necessary improvements, it's going to come back before the board. Because if you remember, it's got to come back before the board. Because at some point, what the board approved in Spotlight, the county could be on, well, the way it was written, the county could do whatever it takes to remedy the property, whether it's making the necessary repair or the demolition of the property, and then those costs could then be placed on as a lien to the property owner for whether it's taxes or anything like that. Now, at this point, we would certainly rather have property owners that want to make the necessary repairs without the county having to go to those means. So we'll see. I mean, we've had responsive property owners to this point, and they're going through the process.
Mr. Booker, just to remind you, and I'm sure you know this, Columbia has had problem with this since before I was even officially county attorney in the late 80s. In fact, I wrote an ordinance for the town of Columbia about that time that started the process of getting some of these places cleaned up, and some of them have been. There are limited things that the county can do to enforce the, for example, the Landlord-Tenant Act, which does apply. There are remedies available, but those are remedies for the tenant. The county does a state statute that provides remedies for the tenant. The county doesn't have any legal role in that, but the difference with this is that I think the board has publicly committed itself through the Spotlight program to a more aggressive pursuit of the remedies that are available, and they can be. We try to encourage the owner to abate the problem, whatever the problem is. If the owner won't do it, then the county does have the authority to do it itself, including demolition of the property and clearing the property. And as Mr. Dowell pointed out, if that happens, the cost of that comes back on the landowner. It's docketed as a lien, which is equal to a tax lien. So we've got some, as you say, tools in the basket, but they are limited to a couple of different things, which Mr. Dowell mentioned. So don't think the county's not acting. The county is pursuing this aggressively.
And not only do we see Columbia, in my district, you see Dixie, the trailer area, which we have not, I don't even know who owns it. I don't know, we can't see the trailer that's behind the funeral parlor, Watson's funeral parlor. You and I went down there one time and saw that. So we do have some situations where our citizens, and that's all they can do. I mean, they have a roof over their head. But the landlords and the people who are supposed to be mine, those are the people that we need to be stepping up. And that's two other areas that I'm just throwing out, and maybe that's something in the near future that we can find out who these owners are and see what we can do about that as well.
Well, and just as a reminder to the board, remember the spotlight is countywide. It's,
yes.
Yeah, it's certainly not just Columbia specific.
Mm-hmm.
So generally the process is citizens or someone or board members notify someone that there's a particular property, and then if staff needs to look into that to determine from just an initial site visit if that property meets the criteria of spot blight, then that's kind of the initial proceeding. You know, generally what we've discussed with the CARE Task Force and those members that have had issues or have taken issue with certain properties is to send a letter or send an email stating, you know, what issue there specifically is, you know, addressing whether it's the property address or going on GIS and addressing the parcel address, so it's clear from staff standpoint what property is being discussed at to meet the spotlight abatement program. So and like I said, we've had numerous letters come in, and that's kind of the process we followed. Then those come to me, then I get in contact with Andy Wills, the building official. He goes out and does initial due diligence to determine if the property meets any of the spot blight criteria, which could be numerous things from, you know, a roof falling in to structural to, you know, there could even be water or sewer issues in the property. So there are lots of triggers that meet the program, you know, anything that affects the public safety. So, and then, you know, if he determines that it does meet it or it doesn't meet it, then we don't put the owner on notice that they've got some time to, you know, 30 days to come up with a plan, and then 90 days to implement the plan.
Okay, so would you add those two?
Yep, and so you're talking about two properties?
Yeah, the one at Dixie and one behind Watson's Funeral Home on 15.
Okay.
I don't know if Mrs. Berman reached out to you, Mr. Dahl, but I think Judith Berman called me and talked a little bit about how much effort was being done by the FLDP to focus on Columbia. And I was recently featured in Smithsonian Magazine, so she's got a lot of exciting ideas, and was talking about trying to have some sort of summit, bringing parties together. So it's a beautiful area. Could be a beautiful area in general. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Point of Fork is, but...
One of the things that Ms. Johnson taught me at EW's one day, Tricia Johnson, and with the Historical Society and in the CARE Task Force and other people, if we've talked about this before, is the cemetery on Freehill Cemetery, right, wanting to clean that up, mm-hmm. and she wants to get together with some folks and get over there and try to start. She's got some researchers lined up, I believe, from UVA.
She's actually, myself and Mr. Hickman, we actually walked the property with Ms. Johnson. About the county maybe, you know, trying to coordinate some type of landscaping, just like a lot of brush cleanup day type things. So that was one thing. And, you know, they have had some researchers out there, and they have made some markings out there to signify that there are graves, unmarked graves out there.
And one of the things that she's afraid of is when we go down there and we're getting these things off the side of this hill, it's a steep hill, but also the fact that they might, when you're cutting down small trees, that they may fall on a headstone and like better term, mess it up.
Yeah, so we're actually in communication with Ms. Johnson about trying to get something scheduled once it gets a little cooler this fall.
Yes, I'll put five snakes on the road.
There are no development grants that, because one time we were looking at moving those people at Columbia to another area. Remember the first grant, but it fell through, I forget what it was. It just seems like there should be some kind of a grant that you can make decent housing, because they have some kind of an income, I'm sure.
Yeah, we can take a look, Ms. Booker. Like I said, I mean, deeper clouds. I don't think that piece of it has necessarily been on our radar recently, but I mean, it's certainly something we can see if there's any programs or grants out there.
DJPC may be able to help with that.
Yeah, I'm sure they could.
All righty. Any other questions, comments from the board? Do we have a motion?
Go ahead, please.
Okay. I move the Board of Supervisors approve a 6-month extension of the CARE Task Force charter until December the 31st, 2021.
Second. Got a motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now move forward with C, authorized salaries of general registrar and local electoral board members 2021-2022. Ms. Snow.
Is Ms. Pace or Ms. Hobbs?
Ms. Hobbs is at. Ms. Hobbs is, she is right there on the screen down there.
Hello, Ms. Hobbs.
Yep.
You're fine. She said she was going to try to be on the call. So basically, it's the Department of Elections that is increasing the salary for the general registrar and also the electoral board. So from 7/1/2021 to 6/30/2022, the new general registrar salary base will go to $83,484. The county would not have to supplement any of that. Right now, the county is supplementing $11,107. It would actually go up to the local treasurers under item 74 of the Appropriation Act. It would have a 5% increase for the electoral board, according to the Code of Virginia as well. And these were both run from 7/1/2021 to 6/30/2022.
Yeah, and just a little background, the Code of Virginia mandates that we pay a compensation to the general registrar, and per this last legislative section, in the 2021 Virginia Acts of Assembly is when they were trying to increase the general registrar's salary to be equal to a local treasurer's salary. So again, this puts the general registrar at the same pay band. And again, we're gonna have to come back to the board with the pay bands. But again, this piece first and foremost, just really, it's a mandate from the state. They are paying for the increase. There's no cost to the county. So let's just to kind of show you right now. So currently, here's the current salary right now for the general registrar. Currently, the county does not get reimbursed for that full amount. We get $54,000. So the county is supplementing the salary. Now the county does that with a lot of our state-supported local employees. We supplement some of those salaries as well. Now with this new thing, as Ms. Snow said, the salary is being increased to $83,484, and that is being 100% covered by the Department of Elections. So currently, we're supplementing $11,000. Now going to this new methodology, and where they're increasing the base salary, if we pay what the base salary is, there's no supplement to the county. So the county is actually saving money basically from what we're paying right now. So that's that one thing. And so really there's a budget motion to approve, but there's just one other thing that we just need a little clarification on, because this is a little bit of a unique circumstance. And so the question is, does the general registrar qualify for the FY22 5% COLA? Now, if you remember through some policies and stuff like that, if she was a new employee hired prior to March 1, she wouldn't be eligible for the COLA. Well, that's not the case. If she was an existing employee and say she transferred to a different role or something like that, she's still an existing employee, she would be eligible for the COLA. Now, for this circumstance, she's not transferring to a different role. She's staying in her current role. It just so happens that the state's saying, okay, well, we need to compensate and pay our general registrars a higher salary, and they're paying the full amount. So in the FY22 budget, for what the general registrar salary, we had an amount in there for a 5% COLA based upon the previous salary. So the question really to the board is the general registrar Does she does that position qualify for this new 5% staff COLA? And if so, it would require an additional $913, because again, there's some money that's already budgeted in the budget for the previous salary. The way I see it, so one, the 913, I'm not necessarily worried about, is it in within all the salary increases? We've got some vacancies, we've got people coming and going, so that's not necessarily the issue. It's just really a matter of, does the board feel that this qualifies? From staff standpoint, it's a unique situation, but looking at our policy, I think it does. I think she does qualify for it, but that's just my looking at our policy. So if the board says that this position does, the 83, like all other county staff, would get the 5% on top of the 83. Again, it's a huge salary increase as it is, but it's not a board-initiated salary increase. It's the state saying this is what we're going to do. So just looking for some direction from the board on this.
Mr. Dahl, will the state pay for it again next year?
No, they are not going to. So no, every year what they do is they will send us an amount that they pay for, whether it's the general registrar or even comp board funded positions. They pay a certain amount and that's what we get. So if we do an increase, well, let's just use a round number. Say we do a $1,000 increase. Doesn't mean they're going to automatically pay that $1,000 increase.
No, but will they pay the 83,000
yes.
Next year as
yes.
Well? Policy has been when one person gets it, everybody gets it.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. And like I said, this is one of those weird circumstances that because of a state change, technically there's a pretty substantial pay increase in there. But again, the state's paying for it all, and it's not a board initiated increase. It's just the state doing it. And actually, if you go back to here. By the state doing this, we're actually saving money. We're actually, the county's saving $11,000. So if you pay the 5%, the county's still saving, not maybe 11,000, but we're saving, $7,000. So from my interpretation, she would qualify.
Mine too. She qualifies.
Ms. Egan?
It's been our policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there were some times that we said if they got a raise, but that was when they've changed positions.
Yeah.
Because if they got a bigger raise than the percent that was given, then you didn't give the percent.
Yeah, but you know, for this is, you know, it's just, it's a little different, but again, and so the motion is not to approve the salary, so to speak, but because it's a mandate, we have to pay it.
Yeah.
And that's not the question. So really the motion is to reflect in the budget what the cost differential is for the salary increase in the registrar's budget. And you know, we've been working with the registrar since they have so many changes happening with the way that they have early voting and all that. They're experiencing some department changes too. So there may be some future items coming back before the board that we're just trying to take a look at and trying to, you know, as they've gone through a year of really kind of determining what this early voting looks like and how it affects their department, there may be some slight tweaks needed to how they do things. But again, so for the 5%, is it the indication of the board that position would qualify?
No, I've heard that too. Nod, Mr. O'Brien, you nod yes.
I mean, I'm going to go with what HR says, and CSR seems to be.
You what?
I said I'm just going to go with what HR says, and leave it at that.
Mr. Whelan, I guess.
All right.
So you got your head.
Yeah, and then this is the motion for the supplemental appropriation to the budget to reflect the increase in funding.
All righty. Do I have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplementary appropriation of $18,548 in the registrar's fiscal year 22 budget from the Department of Elections state funding increase for the general registrar and Electoral Board's annual salary as mandated and established in the 2021 Virginia Acts of Assembly Chapter 552.
And Mr. Chair, I don't know if since we have Ms. Hobbs on here, I don't know if there was anything I forgot to see if she wanted to add anything. I apologize.
We better check before we get a second.
I apologize.
Ms. Hobbs?
Thank you for considering the information. I'll just add the little bit of history for this, is that the pay model for the registrar, for registrars across the state, has not been adjusted since 1976, when the office was really functioning as a clerk's office. And today we have general registrars who are event planners, office managers, voting equipment, and IT specialists. The job has just changed a lot, and this is a long overdue restoration of to fair compensation. And it came about with a big push from the associations, from electoral boards and the state registrars association, to have an evaluation of the registrar's duties performed. And when they did that, they realized that the job is really functioning similarly to the kind of workload that we see in the treasurer's office, which is why the new mandated language restores funding to counties to 100%, and on a pay scale equal to that of the treasurer's office. But that's just the background I wanted you all to have.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
The dog?
Pretty sure the dog seconded it.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm just hoping we're not going to the dog.
Sorry, I've got a foster here that's not well behaved. Thank you, though.
We have a chairman that's not well behaved. Do we have a second?
Are you going to second it, Tony?
Sure. I'd be a second.
Okay, we got a motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next up are appointments. D, board, commission, and committee appointments. Ms. Solis.
So I'll be Ms. Solis.
I'm guessing. I got ready to just say that. That's hard to kick you under.
Yeah, should you have.
I can do it.
Yeah. So really, let me just address the two that there's actually two people that are interested in one position. A majority of them, either there's been one applicant or the incumbent is not being I don't want to say challenged, but anyway, there's no one else in addition for that. The two positions where we have two applicants is one, the Java Board of Directors, Fluvanna Citizen Representative, and then the Jaunt Board, Fluvanna Representative. So for the Jaunt Board of Directors, Fluvanna Citizen Representative, we have Paul Bevins, who is the incumbent, and then Leslie Woodfolk has submitted to be on the Java Board. And for the Jaunt Board, we have Hal Morgan, who is the incumbent, and we also have Leslie Woodfolk that is has submitted to be the Jaunt Board representative for the county. All others are the same.
Yeah, I have a question.
Sure.
In our description of these commissions, do we give any information of when they meet? Because it's real important when I look at Leslie Woodfolk with the Java Board. I'm on the Java Board, been on the board for so long. We meet at 12, and if she's a working, at 12 to 2. So if she's a working young lady, which I assume she is, that's going to be difficult for her, and we meet in Charlottesville. So I know Mr. Bevins, because he's on the board with me. I'd love to put Leslie there in the joint board. She'll have it up. Well, she's come up twice. She came up from the joint board last time. I don't know when they meet.
Kelly, do you have...
Those may say to her, these are not good boards for me. I need to be on one that meets at 7, 7:30. So maybe that's something we need to...
10 a.m.
Huh?
10 a.m. second Wednesday.
Yeah, but I guess
so
does it?
It's on the thing. It's on there.
So on our website, we direct anyone who's interested to please check into that board commission before they apply to make sure that they're if there's special requirements. And most of them don't, but planning commission, those sorts of things. But then I also link, if it's not our board, it's an external one, I link it to their website so that they're able to see that. I don't put that information, let me double check before I say I don't do that. I believe the times are generally for, I call them hours, the ones that the board has created, and, but I'm gonna check that right now because it's easily fixed. I don't. So right now with the jump board, I only note that they meet monthly, but I looked at their site and I can see when they meet. So we can update that on our actual site.
We could. I mean, I guess for all the boards we have, we could have kind of a running thing for what the current meeting times are, whether it's quarterly, monthly, you know, and around what time it is, just so those that are applying are more informed on. If it meets their schedule.
Right, and I don't want Leslie to get discouraged, and I did talk to her after the joint, and I wanted she didn't make that one. And I know Mr. Bevins has been on the board, a very effective member. I would not want to see him off. And so it's a real, you know, toss-up. And when we look at the individuals that are applying, we have a lot of diversity there, and that's something we need to be looking for. Edna Harris is an African-American, a teacher in Charleston, lived there all her life. Nina Simone, she's always been here running the banks and so forth. So it's good to see that. But I still can't see Leslie.
Well, And maybe one thing we can do, at least, and I'm not trying to say which way the board's going with these two positions or necessarily Ms. Woodfolk, but maybe if the board decides that she's not the best fit for these due to the times, you know, maybe that's something where we reach out to her and say, well, here's the boards that maybe, if you're, you know, working 9 to 5, you know, Monday through Friday or whatever it is, these are the boards that maybe fit your schedule better.
Yeah, I think that would be really.
This may sound something off the wall, but another thing, I'll just use me as an example. At one point in time, I was on the Parks and Rec Advisory Board, which met at 3:30 in the afternoon, and I was always coaching.
Right.
I just wasn't going to be there. I mean, it was a rarity if I made it to one of those. If we could check, are people showing up at the boards that they're supposed to be showing up at?
Yep.
That might be something that part of our decision of, okay, well, this seems to be a problem.
Yeah,
because I ended up the next year saying, okay, somebody replace me because I can't get there.
Yeah, you know, maybe that's a good point. Maybe if we're seeing that we don't have lots of participation in the boards, you know, maybe it's just because, you know, people are working Monday through Friday, you know, during the day and they can't make that. And maybe if they're, you know, after hours, maybe there's better participation that could occur. So we can go back and we can take a look at all the boards, those that are kind of under the county's purview, and just kind of see when they meet.
Yeah.
Can you pull up Mr. Morgan's resume again, please?
Mr. Morgan, yeah. Yep, there we go. So, bachelor's in English Lit, MBA Finance. Yep, Flavanna Leadership Alumni Group.
Mr. Morgan has 40 years of experience in passenger transportation, and Jaunt really needs some of that type of experience right now.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, you can't deny that.
Not laughing at it. Absolutely not laughing at it. That is true.
Yeah.
This book brings up a valid point. You know, with the times that these are meeting, it's just, that's why you end up with so many retired folks on these commissions.
Right. And I think that the feedback from the existing board as to the performance of the board members and the attendance of the board members is an important point, right? And, you know, have they been promoting you and active ideas? Because certainly we don't want somebody just to be on the board just to have, for whatever reason, that particular title. It's discouraging to other board members when there's not that participation. But her point is well taken, that you also want to not make it so that it's discouraging for new people to come in and have an opportunity that doesn't just feel like an automatic. But certainly I would agree that, you know, it's it would seem unreasonable for the board to replace Mr. Morgan with your Mrs. Woodford.
Right.
Experience.
Yeah, definitely. I understand.
All righty. So do we have any do we have a motion?
Do you do this one at a time?
I think we can do them all, but we just have to put on the Java board which one and the Jump board.
Yeah, if you all decide on those, then we can just, I mean, I guess.
And Mr. Bevins has served on the
Java
for a long time, and he's tremendously dedicated.
We have a second page too here, but like I said, there's no multiple applicants for these positions.
I do want to say I serve on the social services board with Deborah Johnson, and she's the chairman right now. She's a very good person to represent Fluvanna on that particular board. And Sandra Patterson, I believe I serve on the, I think she's, is sure. she on the social services sure. board as well?
Yeah, I think she is.
Yeah.
Yes.
And both of them are excellent. Yep. So I asked that they be, even though that they're the only ones, I just wanted to say that they're both excellent. Same thing with John Easter and Lewis Johnson. They've served the community well for many years on those boards. And it also takes a certain amount of learning. When I got on the social services board, I had no idea difficult that job is. And the knowledge about what money comes from the state, what comes from the local and federal, and it's so complicated. I'm fortunate to have had that opportunity to learn about it, because I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've served on it, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. That's why it's important for us to serve on the boards and just switch around.
So do you want me to make a motion?
Yeah, I guess if you want to, I guess if you just want to decide on the job and the jaunt one, and Mr. Payne, I guess they could say, with the, just all those that are listed, with the exception of.
You do that, just reference the
reference the two specific ones.
Yeah.
Yes. So, would somebody like to make a motion?
You have to reference the
Java and the jaunt. Java and the jaunt.
Yeah, you can say all the appointees listed in the staff report, with the exception of we are selecting blank for the job board and blank for the job board.
Okay, I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board, commission, and committee appointments, with the exception of the jaunt job board, which we're recommending Harold Morgan, and the other exception is Java, which we are recommending Paul Bevins.
Do I have a second?
Probably need to specify for the terms as listed, right? For the terms as listed.
You can just reference
it. You could reference materials. Yeah, reference the materials on the slide.
Second.
Referencing the terms on the slide.
All righty, we've got a motion made by Mrs. Seeger and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next up is presentations, the Children's Services Act semi-annual update. Mr. Mulder.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
So I know you're all familiar with, I usually come here in May or June to ask for an appropriation request for additional funds to supplement what we've already purchased so far with services for the children and families that are at risk of being placed either out of their home through going into foster care or residential treatment. I regret to inform you that we're going to be breaking tradition this year, and that we will not be requesting an appropriation this year for the first time in a long time. We're actually going under budget before the end of the year. Now, as you can see here, we've got about $173,000 left over. We've got a month left to spend it. Historically, we come nowhere near that amount. We, on average, our family assessment and planning teams and community policy management teams usually encumber about $50,000 to $60,000 per month for one calendar month. So we should be well under what we were budgeted for this year. Again, that's for the work of everyone involved with the Children's Services Act here in the county.
And remember, that's the total budget. The county's portion of that is about what percentage would you say?
I would say we're looking at roughly about $60,000 to $70,000. For that. Next slide. So one thing I do want to note, though, is the trend in spending that's occurred this year. If you look at it compared to other years, we've gone, in the past couple of years, we've gone way below what we've been budgeting, which has been very nice. As of right now, we are looking about about $400,000 to $500,000 above what we're spending now. Now, keep in mind, a lot of that, about $700,000 of that, is funding that we've already encumbered that hasn't yet been, which we haven't received any invoices or totals from some of our vendors. But even then, we're still going. Even then, that amount will probably go down, maybe $100,000 or $200,000. So the question that we have to ask is, are we really spending more money than we have in past years? Next slide. And if we look at the past 18 months, we actually are seeing an increasing trend of increasing spending on a month-to-month basis. I know it looks all over the place, but if you take like the average per month, it has been slowly increasing. This has been a change over the past couple of years, because the past couple of years, we've actually seen a downward trend. But this year we're definitely going to see higher amounts than we have in the past years. The possibility of that continuing to increase next year is a moderate chance at this point. Next slide. So we asked ourselves, what's fueling this increase? When we took a look at what's happened in the past this past calendar year or fiscal year, there have been two things that stick out. The first one is how much we're spending on educational day placements. Now, just to explain what that is, so when a child has educational or behavioral needs that are above and beyond what can be supported by our local school district, we then have to send the child to a private day school that's outside the county school system. Most of the time, they're usually going outside the county. We have a few that do go to Lafayette School up in Troy, but majority of them typically are going out of county, and those typically will run anywhere from $50,000 to $75,000 on an annual basis for that child. This past year, we saw a 15% increase, which is about $120,000 more than the year prior. This is well above and beyond the trend that we've been seeing statewide with private day school costs. On average, they tend to go up about 6 to 7% per year. This year, in our county, our rate is double what the state average is. So that's a little concerning. The other one that's been a bit more concerning, though, is that second one, is that what's called treatment foster care. So when a child enters foster care, the first thing that our social services department does is they try to find a foster home in the county with the family in the county, try to keep that child in the community with a household that's pretty familiar with the community and what's going on. If we can't do that, then social services has to rely on a private agency to place the child, and about 90% of those typically tend to be out of the county. How far out the county really depends on what's available out there. We've had some occasions we've had children gone to Portsmouth, Virginia Beach, the northern neck of Virginia. So while we're able to place the kids, it's not exactly really close to Flavanna County. That also incurs a pretty significant service charge for that. And as you can see, compared to last year, we've doubled that amount of those expenses. Partially, we could say there's been an increase in the number of foster care or children in foster care this year, which is not entirely the case. The bigger issue that we see, as we'll see in a couple slides, next slide, is related more to to what's called a service gap. So every year, our CPT is required to do an informal survey of case managers, agency staff, CPT members, and whatnot, to determine where some of these services, to identify some services that either aren't in our county or maybe inter-county, but aren't meeting the county's needs. We call these service gaps. During our recent meeting, we identified five service gaps, which you can see here. However, I want to focus, next slide, on the top two, which is the family foster care homes and school-based mental health services. So, and we put foster care homes as a priority, because if we don't have foster care homes in this county, they gotta go out of the county. And that could be detrimental to the child's well-being or to the child's progress, as well as adding a significant cost to the county overall. Now, I will say social services does have someone on their foster care team whose role is to sort of do outreach and try to build up the number of family foster homes we have in this county. But it's a new position, it's something, it's the person involved is still getting familiar with the whole system. So while we may see some progress there, we may not see any actual impact for maybe 1 to 2 years, but I don't want to speak on behalf of social services. This is just purely speculation on my part. And the second one was school-based mental health services. This is a huge, change in the school's culture in the past couple of years. Prior to this, there was a service called therapeutic day treatment, in which a child, if they're having some mental health issues, maybe having a small crisis, having some behavioral issues in the classroom, they could go to one staff person in their school and talk over the situation, get some support. And it was typically run by a local community or local mental health agency, primarily Region 10, but they've also used some private providers in the past. Back in 2019, that program came under a lot of, we'll say, administrative burdens, for lack of a better term. It got much harder to approve children to receive this service. And in 2020, when the start of the COVID pandemic hit, that pretty much removed all revenue that was coming in for these programs, effectively closing these programs in not only this county, but also in many other localities in our region. That was a huge mental health support in our schools. Since then, there really hasn't been much to really replace what's been present for that. Without those mental health services, all the schools have been turning more towards CSA to fund some of these services for families and children. And I'm glad that we're here to be able to do that. But in doing so, it adds an administrative burden to our county. It reduces the amount of services that we have available to other other constituents, and it can take a pretty big, and it requires more staffing from school staff for duties that typically they may not have been originally hired to perform. So this has multiple impacts. The other three noticeable ones that have been present for multiple years: substance use counseling, medication management, which is management of individuals who had required psychiatric medication, as well as intensive care coordination, which I'm not even going to go into. We want to get that out of here tonight. Next slide. The other thing I want to mention also is that we have a couple of changes in legislation coming down the pipeline that may affect the amount of money that we may have to spend as a locality on CSA services. First one is called Family First Prevention Services Act. And effectively what this does is that it's going to provide services to families that are at risk of having children entering foster care. What's great about that is those services, the funding for those services, are completely coming from the state. The locality does not have to contribute anything to that. However, in order to fund that, they're taking away some of the potential funding that was already used for some of our children in foster care, particularly those that are in residential treatment placements. As a result of that, there is a belief that the residential cost for these foster care children is going to go up, which means our locality's cost for these residential services is going to go up. So that's something we're keeping an eye on over the next year or so. The other one is a big cultural and almost a sea change for CSA, and that's this House Bill 2117 that passed in the General Assembly in their most recent session. Effectively, what this is doing is this is taking money that we spend for those children, those private educational placements that I talked about earlier, and instead of it being dispersed and spent by and overseen by our local FAP and CPMT teams, it instead is going to be transferred directly to the Department of Education. Now, we don't know what this is going to do on an administrative level. We don't know what this is going to do on a local funding level. We have 2 years to figure it out. Or should I say, the Office of Children's Service and Department of Education has 2 years to figure it out. But the concern that's been coming on a statewide level with a lot of my colleagues is that they're going to use a particular ratio formula that has been used with other things with the Department of Education that can add a little bit more burden on localities and what they spend on these private day placements. Now, given that we spend approximately $1.1 million per year on these private day placements, of which our county is responsible for approximately $400,000. If this goes up, that's just going to increase our cost year over year. And I know we try to run a tight ship. I know we try to make the most of every dollar that we receive. So I want you to be aware of this, so in case some of those dollars do have to go more towards this instead of other services. However, there's a little bit of good news. Next slide. We're kind of going to help address that. We've added some new case manager positions. These are our frontline workers, the ones that actually interact with the children and the families and the vendors to get those services set up. They do a lot of the heavy lifting. So our pool fed has increased, which is great because that allows more. That just allows our delivery of service to just be better and better. We have for years our CPMT in fact has always had open positions. We haven't had that happen in over a year. And when we actually increased the number of teams that we have, doubling the number of FAPs that we have, as soon as that FAP was created, we were able to see every single student on the board immediately. So there is a strong interest in the public agencies that we partner with to see this program succeed and thrive. And the other one is, on my department, as you know, I want to thank you all for approving the funding for that new position. That's going to ease the administrative burden on my department and gives me, or my position, more time to actually work on a statewide level to address some of these issues that I've mentioned already in this presentation, as well as other ones that may come up in the next year or two. But at this point, I want to thank you for your time, for giving me the opportunity to inform you of my program. At this point, does anyone have any questions?
Well, since the state seems to be flush in money, they should maybe pick some of these additional costs up that you're talking about.
And I would love to see that. In fact, I would love to see more of that done on a statewide level to reduce the ratio or the ratios that localities have to spend. Unfortunately, those are decisions that are way above
there you go.
My level and pay grade. I do know that the amount of money that's spent by CSA on the statewide level has been under intense scrutiny by the General Assembly for the past 2 years. In fact, they recently did a study last year through the JLOC committee to study the effectiveness of CSA, where these increasing costs are coming from, and how to address a majority of these. And the results from that study seem to indicate that CSA is still a very effective program. It's a great one to have. The problem is, the concern that came up is that the feeling is that the state agency that oversees our programs, the Office of Children's Services, may need a little more support or need to step up a little more to provide more support to localities in making these programs functional and adequate for their community's needs.
Do you think that the pandemic has had any kind of an effect on the amount that's spent?
Absolutely, that has been the assertion by every single public agency that partners with our CSA program. We were expecting a increase in services and needs to occur much earlier in the pandemic, somewhere around May or June of last year. That didn't materialize until about October, November. Since then, we have seen a significant uptick in the number of new cases that have come into our program. Additionally, the existing cases that we have had for like a year, 18 months, 2 years, or whatnot, have also seen an increase in support and mental and behavioral health needs. So it has definitely had a direct impact. Will that change when we go back to some semblance of normalcy within the next 12 to 18 months? I don't even want to predict that.
Nobody can. I mean, not that's one of those things nobody can see in that crystal ball.
No, but I think the biggest thing that's going to have more of an impact is what happens with our funding for these educational day placements going from going directly to the Department of Education rather than to local CSA programs.
Once again, it just looks to me like one of those things where they think that the state can see it better than the people at the local level. A lot of times we find out that it doesn't work that way.
I can say that CSA and the CPMT people, we take care of our greatest need, families and children. We should be proud of what we do. Social services, Region 10, the court system, Brian, we have tremendously heartbreaking cases. And we also see results when we put our efforts. We spend a lot of money. I tell you, every cent is worth it when that child and that family get stabilized.
Absolutely.
So it's hard work, but we do a good job. So the
Planet
should be proud of what we do.
They do, and I'd also like to add up the Planet Public Schools as part of that recognition. They have really stepped up with this pandemic above and beyond with addressing not only this, but also a lot of the other additional duties and burdens they've had as a result of the COVID pandemic.
Right. Like they had a child that they couldn't find a placement. They stayed with that child in social service building until they could find a place for them. That's how committed and how you have to, that's what you have to do. And they, although it was a COVID, but they had to go to those homes. They had to go visit and see what was going on. So it's a hard job. Like you said, Patricia, it's a hard job.
Yes, it is. And we're thankful for the people
thankful.
That do it.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're doing
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in.
My pleasure.
All righty. Next up is the consent agenda. F, minutes of May 19th, 2021, Ms. Solis. G, Zions Crossroads Sergeant Corporation, change order number 3. Is there anything we want to pull? Mr. Weaver, do you have anything?
No, I was looking at some notes I had, but I think it's all right.
Okay, then do we have a motion to adopt the consent agenda?
So made.
For a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do we have any unfinished business?
Yeah, so the two items, Mr. Chair, members of the board, that I talked about at the beginning of the meeting during adoption was one, BOS salary, looking at that. Because again, so since the board is up for
three members,
it's this board that needs to do that to adopt that salary. And Mr. Payne, is there any time limits that you're aware of?
I don't remember.
Okay.
So we have a time limit. Remember Steve missed it one year because he didn't.
Yeah,
there was
I
a
thought
time
so
limit,
too,
like
but
July.
I don't remember.
Yeah, he had
right.
to do
something. I think there is, but I was not prepared to talk
right.
about it tonight.
And
we didn't start soon enough.
And we missed that on our $1,000 increase.
Yes, ma'am. So I just sit there, like I said before, everybody got a
raise.
Well, 5% raise, but they also got the bonus checks, $250 and $500.
So one thing,
except us.
So I could bring information to the board at the next meeting, and I could potentially have a presentation and action if the board wants to go that way. Now, with the board approving positions in this budget, with there being some changes, you know, it would be ideal if the positions that the board approved, if they're all on board July 1, but I can tell you there's no way that all the positions that the board approved are going to be on board July 1. So I think in this budget year, we would be able to find, you could allocate, due to this timing of hiring people, the savings from that to cover it in this fiscal year, and then it would roll in. But if the board wants me to look into that, I get a VACO salary survey, which shows what other boards are making in surrounding localities and, things like that. So I could bring a presentation and a potential action to the board at the next meeting, assuming that we're all within the same time frame. But I was thinking July 1 was the...
Mr. Jared, you're on July 1.
Yeah.
You're on July 1.
I'll be gone, this is the second. Is it July 1 the meeting?
Well, no, I'm talking about, I could bring something at the June 16th
meeting.
Yeah,
June 16th. It would have to be done June 16th if we're going to do it. I just never will get over the fact when the first thing with coal ash started, I got a phone call, and I answered the phone, and they said, "This is so-and-so's staff chairman. I'm speaking, I imagine, with Mr. Sheridan, staff manager," or whatever the title was, "and my boss would like to speak with him. Can you set up an appointment?" And I said, "I think I can."
That just was one staff member?
Yes, so Ms. Harris was doing some work for me while we were sitting here, so it is July 1, so we could have something to the board for the next meeting, have a presentation and an action too, and give the board options.
I know at least one time we voted against it because
I know, and I'm going to hit
we
you.
We did because it was. When there was that big dip in the recession.
Right.
It was 2000.
6 years ago. Yeah. I'm guessing.
I don't think a board member comes on here for the money.
No, sir.
To me, that's less significant. If you're coming here for the money, I would have to question.
Why would we want to do this job anyway?
Right.
Yes, sir. I mean, I've got no problem with it, Ms. Eager.
To be presented.
The 16th?
Okay.
To decide. How about, are you okay with that, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Booker?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
You have your...
I've got three nods.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I'll get something prepared for the 16th. Just want to kind of get some direction from the board for the Coves at Monticello, the affordable housing complex that's been presented to the board on a couple occasions. Just want to get some direction from the board as far as, I know Mr. O'Brien, I think you had a...
I met with them yesterday.
Yeah.
It was a productive meeting. They highlighted some items that I think the board should consider as well. I think there's a lot of different pieces that they weren't able to present. Mr. Harrington was able to be there, and he had some different presentation / information that would be useful to the board. I think that they understood that there was, some reservations on the part of the board members, and that they needed to see what other available options are. And I think they're going to do that. I was about to ask you whether or not we were able to reach out to the TJPC or to somebody else in affordable housing for a presentation in advance of that, because I think that would be instructive for the board as well, too.
So let me talk to the TJPC, because we could potentially, see what we could get lined up for the July meeting, potentially, since we've got the beginning and the ending meeting, so maybe we can do a twofer, possibly.
Sure.
If there's anything we can do prior at the early meeting, and then maybe have them at the later meeting, potentially.
Yeah, and they did indicate that there were some timelines and some research that would suggest that completing that project as a private entity, non-affordable housing, would be challenging. So I think it's useful for the board to understand all the factors.
What is affordable housing?
Well, there's a variety, of course, right?
Yes.
I mean, there is a variety, but to give you an example, my friend is moving out of the lake. He has a 1,400 square foot home, and he was able to rent it in 3 days at $1,800 a month.
Is that affordable?
Not for most people.
Right? No.
No, not for most people.
I don't think so. I don't think the rates that we're being offered on this either is affordable either.
Well, there's different tiers of affordable housing.
What we need to look at.
Right. And then, and they
what
mentioned,
I saw.
They mentioned that.
Well, they had 900 was the
right.
lowest. 935 was right. the lowest one, and that's reasonable.
They did address
but you
the
had
fact
to be
that
making
sort of different tiers.
Yeah, you had to
40% of the median income,
right.
which was only about $32,000.
Because we have such a high median income.
Right, but at $32,000. $950 a month eats up a lot of them.
That's right.
And I think the median income is, the median income is somewhat distorted by the income of a lot of Lake residents that are retirees.
Yeah.
So that's not really reflective of maybe people that are working.
Yeah. Isn't it 70-some thousand?
No, it's not. It's actually like 80 or 90. It's like 80 or 90 because we're in, certainly in like a part of an area that includes Charlottesville or Albemarle.
Yeah, we're in a really large census tract.
Yeah, we're in a really large tract. So the average median income, it kind of spreads a wide area, and it's pretty high.
Because I was going to say the largest employer in our county only has about 10 people that make above what the median in salary is.
Yeah.
And that's, 700 or 600 employees.
Yeah.
But what concerns me is affordable housing, part of their definition is that it's up to $1,500. I don't think that's close to affordable housing.
I don't either.
Well, again, I think it's looking at the mix and, us understanding it a little bit better and allowing them to, present.
And we need to look at it from the taxpayers'
absolutely
position. That's
absolutely.
Because evidently they can't get it on their own, so they want the taxpayer pay for it.
If I understood correctly, it was because of the type of loan that they were getting that they had to do the tax breaks, because they got a different loan across the mountain and they didn't have to have the tax breaks when they put up the project in Verona.
Right.
And went over to visit.
Again, I asked for some specifics from Mr. Harrington with regard to the market studies that suggested, what the true market without affordable housing, pricing-wise would be for the construction of those projects. And I mentioned that those are some of the things that you should present to the board so they understand it. Because I think ultimately what we want to see is, that whole development Colonial Circle to be successful, to be attractive, and to also be able to support local businesses in the area. And it does us no good to have, the plan as it stands right now, and not have it filled. And then especially if you think of where the sketch is right now, where the plan is right now, you'd have a huge hole if you didn't build the apartments. So if there's no developer willing to build at market rates, then that affects the integrity of that whole project, I guess. Yeah. And that's something the board needs to consider.
And we need to also understand when we say taxpayers are subsidizing it, we need to understand that that's not really the case. Not necessarily.
Well, they're not subsidizing the people that live in there and move in there.
Yeah,
but to get 20 years of tax breaks, that's a lot of money.
That's huge.
It's a significant amount of money.
That's a significant piece of money. Sure. I mean, for
but
20 years.
Yeah, and that's
what
you're. And if you never sell that property, that's what you're going to get 20 years anyway.
It's all a big word. $13,000
and something.
Well, right. I mean, I think it is a big word. But that's. I felt like in my discussions with them that they understood. The hesitancy on the part of the board, and that they were willing to go back and talk to their finance people, and that they also, they presented some other thoughts and where they thought that, maybe there was a lack of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think it would be useful for the board to hear them again, as well as to hear from the TJPC Commission, which did a substantial study on affordable housing in the area.
Right. Well, there's one other question I have about the whole project.
I just feel like right now is a really bad time for them to even be thinking about this project, because building materials are
skyrocketing.
So they will most assuredly come back, maybe not to where they were, but right now.
They can't get the materials now.
We talked a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's a factor in the cost. But so is upcoming inflation, so is upcoming interest rates, and likewise there is, and I can't properly address the specific timeline for some of the grants that they have and how to make those happen that would affect that as well too.
Yeah.
He was saying that for them to build apartments there, so there's two parts, right? There's the park, which affect the Pinnacle Group, which Mr. Park is a part of, which is specializes in affordable housing. And then there's Mr. Harrington. He runs, I, 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 for, forget the name, it's going to be a
Seven Group,
the Seven Group, and he builds regular apartments. And he's the one who said, you know, wasn't here, said, look, we looked at this, and we think if we were to try to come in and do this at, you know, without affordable housing, that our rates would have to be in the $2,000 a month range.
Ooh.
So that's, I mean, so that's what I'm saying, you know, it's like, where you know,
I think
where
also,
do we have that?
Have you talked to the board about what's being proposed up on 250?
No, we've got, I mean, the board is aware, I made mention that there's a development similar to Colonial Circle, but double the size.
Double the size, and if we have both Colonial Circle and this other project, it's going to change Flavanna. We won't have enough schools capacity. We're talking about almost 1,000 new families.
And that's in Flavanna County?
Yes.
The one up in...
Yeah, and it's in the growth area.
Well, real quick, I just have one other question that we mentioned one time, and we talk about all these developments around the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody ever sat down and talked to Aqua and made sure that they've got plenty of water?
Yes, we're having active conversations with Aqua.
I just don't want to
outstand
the water system.
And what's that? How do we stand with water then?
Yeah, well, I mean, they've got capacity, and the question is to what degree they have capacity, but probably the bigger issue is, I mean, they're not the bigger issue, is maybe the suppression needed, and having the boosting and the suppression needed for more, like, higher density or even more commercial. So that's going to be probably one of the bigger conversations.
That could be another price tag that we end up with. Mr. Miles, I see you making your way towards the mic.
No,
do you have a comment?
Or that price tag goes to the developer.
As long as we get it.
Yes.
Beforehand.
So, Mr. O'Brien, before we get too deep in the weeds in this, did they make note of when they need some? Because maybe I could try and get a work session set up with TJPDC and them possibly to...
I don't think he gave me... I didn't get the impression that it was like in the next few weeks, but, you know, certainly within the next few months.
Okay.
We really need to get ahead or really know how many houses we have, because we don't want to be left holding 50 trailers at our school system.
No, that was...
So how many houses...
Well, that's going to load our schools up, too, you know, with all this new building.
That was a question that I was asked during one of the Rotary meetings, you know, what is our school capacity? And I sent an email to Chuck Winkler to say, hey, we need to know what is the availability or, you know, let's call it excess capacity in each of the schools right now, because we need to know that as, one, there's some developments that are already kind of in the works and already approved, but specifically any other developments or future developments that we certainly need to know that.
Look what the county did on a yearly basis at the end of last year. Look at the new buildings then. That was one of the highest that I've seen.
About
200 houses.
Well, the one thing I'll say about that as far as capacity goes, we know that our high school right now is an 1,800 capacity. If we go back to being a true high school where it's only 9 through 12, right now we're looking at 1,150 students. But the problem is, this coming year, we don't know how many are coming back. We don't know what the influx is going to be. I mean, nobody's going to be able to answer that question right now.
Well, I understand from Brenda that their kindergarten enrollment is way up.
Well, they talked about how that was going to be up.
So the kids are already...
Part of that is because some of the kids that were eligible for kindergarten, they held back. They basically said, okay, because of the pandemic.
They're starting at 5.
So you're getting 2 classes, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're going to get other kids back, and we know we got the influx across from the main gate. We got the other development coming in on where Bob lived. On Broken Island.
Yep.
Broken Island. Then we got the smaller ones.
Island Hill, Village Oaks,
and then we got
Circle.
The smaller one up on top of the hill, Panorama.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it's called
not Panorama, but High Point. I drive by all the time.
Yeah, and then, I mean, and again, those are all things that the board should consider. maybe 1,000 home development isn't what we should have. Maybe a smaller development is what we should have. Again, I think it's important that we just hear the facts out. And I know, even though I'm on the TJPC and I've heard that presentation, just trying to understand what they were talking about and how affordable housing works and what the marketplace is.
Or even you trying to repeat it to us.
Try to repeat it, yeah.
It's not going to happen.
I'll try and get something set up for both the TJPC and then maybe it's just like a little bit of an affordable housing work session or something like that.
All right. Any other unfinished business? All right, hearing none, I'll move forward with new business. Is there any new business?
Just one quick item, and this is, and like I said, no discussion from the board. And Mr. Payne can chime on this too. Right now, the state has changed some of their purchasing guidelines as far as thresholds are concerned. Just with the way that we're doing contracts and some of the time that it takes from the county attorney's office, we would like to bring a presentation forward to the board to look about changing some of the limits. And the sheet that you really have there, that's kind of our current. That's kind of our current threshold of what we have for small purchasing of, 0 to 3,000, we need one quote, 3,000 to 20,000, we need two quotes, 20 to 33 quotes, 30 to 44 quotes.
That should be 50, sorry.
Yeah, and then anything over 50, we have to do some type of formal solicitation. Ms. Toller is getting some stuff from her listserv. We would like to, even though the state can go up to 200,000, I would like to possibly see about having the board allow some increases to some of these amounts and possibly going up to 100,000 before we have to do solicitations. Some of that too will help with some expenses from county attorney's office too. And Ms. Toller, do you want to chime in on that?
A big part of the expense for purchasing are the solicitations. Ms. Hoffman in Fred's office does a review of every solicitation. She's involved with everyone. With being able to push some of those off with a higher dollar limit, we're going to save some money there. We're going to save time and efficiencies. Public Works wants to do some jobs that come just over that $50,000 threshold, and they're put on hold because we have to go through official solicitations. It saves them time, saves them efficiency, gets work done faster, saves on the attorney's fees. It just makes sense all around.
Fred, you have
I think that's a pretty good summary of it.
Saves time for everybody, mm-hmm. including y'all.
It's probably not necessary because a lot of these lower end projects, and I say lower end, 50-60,000, are pretty straightforward. It's when you get the big projects that you really need the magnitude of RFP
and the question really today is, do you want me to bring it back in
with some proposals,
presentation for you to consider? If you don't want to consider it, I won't work on it, but if you want to consider it,
I can change some, but there's validity in getting several quotes, but maybe this is overdone.
Yeah, and we would still have the quotes, but again, just tweaking some of the dollar amounts a little bit.
We would definitely make sure that we still have the ability to offer competitive prices or get competitive prices, because that is the foundation of the procurement policy.
Ms. Eager?
Be fine.
Ms. Booker? Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, board.
Any other new business? All right, hearing none, I will now open up the second round of public comments. Anyone wish to address the board, please state your name, address, keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wish to speak at this time?
My name is Lois Faulks. I would love the opportunity to speak one more time if I could.
Yes, ma'am, Ms. Faulks, go ahead.
I want to thank you guys so much for all that you do. I think I live at 3310 Creek Road in Palmyra, again, the property adjacent to the Ballinger Bluff project. One of the silver linings of this whole ordeal for me has been to become familiar somewhat with what you guys do. I have to say I've been pretty ignorant about that. I've been a nurse for 40 years. I work at UVA, so I come back and forth. But the business end of Fluvanna County I have not participated in, and I really am in awe of what you do, and I thank you for that. Another golden bit of this has been to learn to know my Palmyra neighbors more than I have. And I just want the board to hear these words, that there are many more neighbors in Palmyra that are very concerned about this Ballinger Bluff project other than just the two of us that you see repeatedly. There are probably 10 or 12 or so that have been very verbal and very vocal and very active. We meet and we email back and forth, but they have largely been silenced by some pretty coercive, I think, and current land deals and agreements over driveways and such. So it's not just the two of us that are representing this issue. We also are concerned about Fluvanna County turning into a suburb and losing the rural flavor of this area. I've lived here for 35 years and my heart is here. My sole happiness is the country living in the rural area. So it makes me sad when we think about losing some of that and having bigger roads, bigger schools, just more city-like environment. So there are two things, and that's it, and I'll be quiet. I want to speak about it tonight because I want you folks to have a chance to look at the plat that Mr. Miller has presented so that I can speak about this again on the 16th. There are two things: a naturally occurring sloped drainage area in the very center of this subdivision that flows as a creek every spring, that flows downhill through his property to mine. He plans to put one of his large central storm water basin collection units there at the base of his property. So that's not clear to me how this will affect his property, except to sit on an intermittently flowing small creek and fill up his basin faster with naturally occurring water. So I'm wondering about the EPA involvement in that. Even more alarming, number two for me, is on that plat and the posterior stormwater management basin that he has called SWM-2 on the proposed plat, which appears to sit right on a flowing creek, and the wastewater treatment unit, which he calls WTU-5, actually crosses that flowing creek. And I want to know if the EPA is aware of that. And those are my two concerns at this moment. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to speak.
You're welcome, ma'am. Thank you. Is there anyone else wish to speak at this time?
That would be DEQ. No.
I'm wondering.
What's it? Probably, yeah.
Not the EPA, yeah.
All right. All righty. I'll get you in just a second. Do you want to speak?
No. All I was going to say is I do want to go to the property. So if somebody can expose me to that property,
yeah,
I want to walk somewhere.
Yeah, I'm actually taking Mrs. Booker and Mrs. Eager. We're going to look at it tomorrow. We've got time. I'll work out a time with you, Mr. Weaver, because it's pretty wide open. Yeah, I'll work
out. Do we have to do it through them, or if I'm driving by there, can I just go see the property?
No, the property owner has given myself and permission for myself or board members to go by the property and take a look at the property. Mr. Miles reached out to Mr. Miller, and Mr. Miller had advised us that was acceptable. So yeah, so Mr. Sheridan, yeah, if you want to just...
And if I'm driving by, I just pull on in the driveway?
Yep. Now, granted, I don't know what the driveway looks like.
I won't block it.
Well, I'm not sure how far you're going to get in the driveway because it's...
My four-wheel drive driver's
ankle.
No.
Yeah.
You don't need your four-wheel drive into the property.
Yes. I can pull over into grass.
Yeah.
It's not too bad when you get in, but once you get up on the hill, and you'll see the two test wells just for one.
On the hill, huh?
Yeah.
What is that slant to the land? What's the slant on the land? Percentage-wise. That concerns me. I hear people talking about that. That's the reason I want to see it.
It's not as bad as the Ballinger, what we call the courthouse tract on Ballinger Bluff, on the actual bluff, but it's a little 15, 20% behind Mrs. Falk's area. You'll see, but if you were to go on the courthouse tract across from Mrs. Schofield's house the other way,
it drops considerably.
I can bring just kind of a layout of what's being proposed. Right. So as we go on, you can kind of get an idea of where the layout is.
Appreciate it. Most everything was right down that left hand side as you go in the driveway.
Correct.
Okay. Everything to your left would be house.
You don't think we'll walk into any critters?
My goal is to drive up as far as we can. I have 4-wheel drive, so.
Oh.
Tomorrow. You guys are going to meet at the County Admin Building at 11. Yep.
All right. Any other new business? Any other public comment? I'll now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors to enter into a closed meeting pursuant to provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1 and Section 2.2-3711A3 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, for the purpose of discussing personnel and real estate.
Second. Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The chair votes aye. We're now in closed session, and I can...
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned to the Savannah County Board of Supervisors can meet again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge one only public business matter lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now closed or adjourned.